Welcome to another broadcast of Project New Rancha on the Artist First Radio Network. Have celestial beings been shepherding us here on Earth since time began? That's the premise this program examines. And in my humble opinion, one mind who knows more about that than just about anyone. It's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Z-Man.
How's the life in paradise today?
Oh, it's nice today.
Yeah, we get it.
Pretty good, about 83 degrees right now.
It's just been beautiful here in the northeastern United States, and we're just blessed to have summers here. You get to really appreciate summers when you don't have it half the time. But anything frightening going on in the world since our last broadcast that we need to know about?
Oh, not really. Some interesting things. I've been looking for evidences of perhaps anything in, as far as affecting any electronic device because of the sun. And just one peculiar thing is that I've noticed that I lost some solar charging type lights, you know, those lights that charge up with the sun, and then at night they could turn on because the electric eye, you know.
Everybody has those. They're like $4 a piece. That's how
yeah,
inexpensive they've become. They're all over the place.
Right. And some of them went, one of them has been working just fine. Went out on me, and I was thinking, I looked at the timing on when it went out, and I said, doggone it, that's about when we're supposed to have received a little bit of a blast from the sun. And I said, well, it didn't affect anything major, just this little thing. And it blew out the solar eye on that, or the photo eye, which just turned, you know, just... It just went blind.
Just fried it?
Yeah, essentially it blew it up. I blew out the switch in it, the junction. So that's a sign, though. But it's, you know, there's some things that, you know, happened a while back that did seem to be timed close enough. But you know, it's attributed to wind, yet. When the point at which the power failed was up near the top of the summit of Haleakala, so I looked at that as another indication. Is what happened there? You know, it's just routinely it happens, but I'm just trying to put those together as far as if they did correlate with perhaps a bit of a blast from the sun. And it, in a way, it did a little bit, so I'm kind of wondering, maybe something does is cooking up here, but we should see evidence is much stronger than that eventually if we've got something to really worry about in terms of this solar cycle.
Do you think it matters in an event like that, if there's, you know, charged particles flying at us, do you think it matters if you're at the equator where they're really coming almost, you know, point blank, as opposed to being in the either more northern or southern latitudes where it's more of a glancing blow?
I think, yes. except in the areas in which the particles itself find a type of magnetic vortex, and then the particles begin to be funneled into a locality, and then get discharged to our planet through that type of funneling effect of the guided. So, that's of course one of the electrostatic guidances, on how our electron ray tubes, first in oscilloscopes and of course the TV sets, guided electron beams with electrostatics. And that's similarly how our magnetosphere, which has been perturbed somehow, is, guiding charged particles, which is how our, TV set, the old vacuum tube, cathode ray tube TV sets worked with a electron beam that was guided by electrostatics, forming an image on the phosphorescent screen. In a similar sense, in a much greater, more gigantic sense, our globe does do the same thing. This is another thing that I'm kind of wondering about because of some of the effects that have been seen in the animals, like what happened with, people were blaming it on man-made occurrences and for, killing off some dolphins and things like that in large pods, yet there were evidences that showed that they were burnt. So, anyway.
Yeah. What do you mean? You can't just say anyway after you say dolphins got burned. You got to think, how the hell did that happen, I guess we don't know right now. Listeners, if you have any ideas on that or anything else, you can email it to us at dj@artistfirst.com, and we'll read your emails later in the broadcast. Well, if I recall correctly, when Riley's prediction a couple weeks ago, what was going to happen this year, and the celestials seeding our atmosphere with gold particles and other, heavy metal particles, would that act like, because is that a true reflector? I mean, is that what they're building, is a reflector the size of our whole atmosphere?
Yes, it would show signs of perhaps creating a much more effective radio reflector. It's what makes our high frequency signals bounce around. And I didn't really monitor this past weekend, which was a ham radio field day, which is a good indicator of how good that may be, because then the signals would be way up and the count of numbers of contacts around the world would be tremendous. But in that'll be a statistic that can be easily looked up later, as people competed for the most amount of contacts using the ionosphere. And if we have a ionosphere that has been hopped up using heavy metals or metals that are similar in the idea of what the Anunnaki used in supposedly to heal their atmosphere from a solar blast, a solar wind or wind that was causing them to lose their atmosphere. It could be, but we should see something like that. But that may not always, if they're very, very close together, yes, there'll be a real shielding effect. But if they're far, very, they're not very densely packed together, there'd be a different effect. Maybe we wouldn't see much of it in the radio spectrum of ionized, the ionized layer in the ionosphere. But who knows right now?
They've been having an ever-increasing number of end-of-the-world programs, violent, solar problems, celestial being programs. And one that I've seen recently a couple of times is a program called NASA Secrets Revealed or something. It might be close. I might not have it exactly right, but it's a series about and footage from space flights. And a lot of the, my goodness, there is just tons of stuff that NASA has. And there's one astronaut, I believe his name is Story Musgrave. Am I saying that correctly? Is that his real name, Story
yeah.
Musgrave? Well, he's on the program a lot. And they just plainly show you stuff, show you incidents where sometimes there's 50 or 60 in the view of the camera. I mean, these are fleets. Maybe, you know, if it wasn't for our government or whoever covering this up, they're trying to reveal themselves. And when you see mobs of these things in the atmosphere, I mean, do the Celestials kind of go, well, gee, they must know we're here. You know, they're not trying to hide anything, are they?
I mean, actually not. No, as a matter of fact, I remember if you go and look at, find the picture of Cassini, which took the picture of the New Jerusalem, the Grand Mothership, orbiting Saturn, in the close-up view, and Cassini was able to zoom in on it, you see this luminescent sphere with two dark patches. I remember seeing those patches. And if you flip the picture upside down, it looks like the head of an alien. And as a matter of fact, the pilot of the craft on the way back, and this is one of the things that was curious about it, you know, as people were out there looking at the night sky, which is just, you know, the stars, and noting where their origin was. They were pointing out a star where they came from or area. And I remember distinctly finding at least Orion, recognizing in the area in which they were showing me, it was not exactly Orion's belt, but they were pointing in the area near that. And they were happy that at least I remembered Orion's belt. But also, when the ship came into view, the pilot looked at it and pointed at it and smiled, kind of like, he didn't really smile, but it kind of gave me that impression that he was like, look at this, and I was, wow, look at that thing, you know, and then he pointed to himself, like, sort of, me and that, take a look, don't we look, you know, he was trying to say that they actually can light it up to look like them. And, you know, like a giant, you know, balloon, you know. But that's exactly what has been going on with them. And they've done that and made, since Cassini, they've done all kinds of acrobatics there. They've flown through the rings of Saturn, making a great wake, that wake that looks like a speedboat went through the rings of Saturn. They did that, you know, things like that. Just for our benefit, and especially mine, because I don't think I'd come out of the woodwork if something that was as scientific or is as scientific an instrument as Cassini didn't bring out some pretty solid evidence to back up my story, as well as having a secondary opinion, which was Riley Martin's account, which is very accurate.
Well, just seeing some of these images from NASA itself, and you know there's lots that they won't let you see, when sometimes there's dozens and dozens of these things in the field of the camera all at once. You know, that's clusters of these things. Again, if we all had telescopes and we're looking up there, we'd see them, but we don't. And you know, the only way we can find out about this stuff is through our governments, and for whatever reason, our government chooses not to tell us what's going on up there. I think we're shooting at one. They got great footage of a craft that's flying in the atmosphere, film from the shuttle, and you see a flash of light emanate from the ground, and this thing makes a right angle turn and gets out of the way, and a moment later some kind of, I don't know, particle beam or something flies up into space, and we shot it. Now it missed. You know, what's that weapon? What kind of cool stuff are they making out there at Area 51? But now, turning this around, the Celestials are like, for heaven's sakes, They know we're here. First of all, they're shooting at us. Number two, you know, we're putting just hundreds of crafts in the atmosphere, and they have to know we're here. They probably, you think that they're making the assumption that everyone knows they're here?
I don't know if they're making the assumption that everyone knows they're here, but they, as far as operating, still are operating in a manner in which they cannot, you know, really make their presence really solidly known. Otherwise, it may look like a invasion from outer space. But they have, on occasion, deliberately made themselves known through flybys and grand appearances, armada of ships, and I will continue in that program and not really landing, just staying in the air and having a grand appearance of many. But even then, it can be. I mean, how could somebody dismiss the Phoenix Lights as being a whole, nothing but, you know, whatever, you know, flares or whatever? But
well, we know
it,
why.
It did. People did. You know.
We know why, and I'm so glad you brought that up. At the time of the Phoenix Lights, the governor was a gentleman. I don't recall his name, but there was because currently in Arizona, the governor is a woman. But back then, during the Phoenix Lights incident, the governor was a man. And they show press conferences. He's been on recent shows, and I think he wanted to set the record straight. Because at the time, they made fun of it. At the press conference, they had a clown dressed up in an alien suit with rubber gloves and just made fun of the whole thing. And now that he's no longer in office and free to do what he wants to, he's done a show and he came out and said, look, I was told what to say, but I want to tell you right now that earlier that evening I was out at so-and-so park. I don't know what park he had, but it was outside of town with his wife and kids and other friends. And he says this giant triangular-shaped object floated across our head that had to be hundreds and hundreds of feet across, silently moved above our head a few hundred feet, and we all stood there and watched it. And he goes, I don't want to go out and not having set the record straight. I saw this, my whole family saw this, and a lot of people living in Phoenix saw this. But again, somebody wants to make sure they cover it up. But I just thought that was interesting that you would bring that up because he's come clean.
Yeah, well, that's true. He did come clean, and he did wear an alien suit, I guess, to make fun of the whole idea. They're afraid of panic. They're afraid of various things, but most of all, they're afraid of the fact that if people realize that we are not alone, the leaders of our planet, their strength of leadership is immediately threatened because they will bear witness to the reality of angels, of all things. They'll bear reality and strength into the religions of the world, which testified of assistance and help in times of need by these celestial beings, these aliens. And this is a very important factor because no longer will the religions of the world be considered mythology, but reality in terms of declaring the concept of life after death, the power of angelic beings, and just the reality of a greater community beyond our planet. Now, myself, I did not, you know, immediately fall at the feet of Tan and Nell and say, oh, great God. In fact, I was the opposite way. I was angry. I was very, very They rubbed me the wrong way because I was looking for God. I was trying to find some angelic being, which I had in my imagination, being some being of light and looking like a humanoid and human being, and with wings and a glorious white appearance come out of heaven. Well, instead, I got Tannenella. Well, later, I found them very pleased that I was angry, very happy that that I knew that they weren't gods, and more than willing to show me even more. And that's how I got the invite to come and see how things work with them, the angels of heaven, you might say, which also included some of those that I had imagined. But they were very, very high up. These are the Verontatech observers, most high observers, the beings of light, and our destiny, our essentially our ascension destiny. That's where we were created for, to have that destiny of being a conscious and real and living eternal being, but starting somewhere, which is starting basically from dirt, from coming out of the planet as mortal beings. Now, that is an interesting note, because I'm coming from it experientially and having really experienced it, but the timing had to be right. So they had to make sure that my testimony wouldn't be rubbed out of existence because of those that want to guide it into that manner. Instead, I was prepared to be able to give it from the point of view of actual reality that the religions of the world are true. Those that point toward God are trying to do a measure of looking at how our planet needs to come into a type of alliance or alignment with the greater celestial community, and that also includes the foreign thoughts and philosophies that are also seeded by Lucifer's rebellion and Satan's rebellion, which left many of the fingerprints of alive and at work within our community right now. But even those who find themselves morphed or changed through the hardship of our lives over the period in this purifying process. But looking ahead, at least I'm gratified to know that they've been giving me insight into what this will be like after a transition, when means of elevating our planet, which was primarily through finance and banking and commerce, and then because commerce had to follow this finance and banking idea and go around the world, which was basically forming and becoming an enslavement system of debt and enslavement, to transitioning to one which is more aligned to what Christ himself talked about, which was a system of faith, where instead of enslavement, you had belief, you had alignment toward the greater good. So, the function of money will not be for gaining of wealth, but just an exchange in terms of making faith-based progress move forward. So it's a different, very different mechanism, and it didn't need to be, and it doesn't need to be based on a archaic form of money, which would be gold, silver, or precious gems. It could be actually it is, and for the rest of the universe it is based on a truly fiat type of currency, which is faith. Instead of saying fiat, you say faith-based currency.
So, and we're not saying money is bad. It's just how you use it. how it is spent, or what good or evil is done with it. Does it benefit society, or does it benefit one individual? Which is just throwing it out there, folks. Michael, when you say that upon revelation of these beings that they're wishing to testify to the reality of angels, I believe it's exactly what you said. And if the population of the earth realizes that, hey, there's these advanced beings, we also have to realize, don't we, that just because if there's good angels, then therefore there must be bad angels, the fallen angels. They are just as much a reality as the good ones. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. Any of them who are indeed very, very convinced that their way was ultimately the best, the right way. We can see evidence of that in our ascension, in terms of how our planet has become modernized. And again, the tools they use, one of the tools is the finance system. The introduction of the method of money and currency and finance was one of their tools introduced in the earlier states of development of our planet. It may have gotten lost, but it was refound again. And the very idea of using and needing gold was a sign that their base of operation still found certain types of rare metals like gold, an essential element in them, functioning within their society. Now, what is found out, what is known from the celestials, is that it was wasn't just our planet that had a problem. It was the entire system of planets that had a problem in the functioning of the government. And they did have wars among themselves and against themselves. Not against, necessarily against those that I was with, because the level of technology is quite different. One of the things that is interesting that I was noting and looking at ancient aliens, or that concept of ancient aliens, was looking at some of the cut stone being precisely cut and being very, very old, you know, something in the nature of 30,000 years old. Well, this particular type of technology is inferior to the technology that I was introduced to. It's one in which uses a type of control on material that is more powerful than our own idea of laser, but yet it produces and is able to produce very sharp corners. In the technologies that I was able to be around, sharp corners are not evident in the way they build. Everything is rounded off, and it is because of the way in nature they build with from very minute, very small nanocrystal concept and growing everything to gigantic proportions at the crystalline level, or even at the molecular level, being able to control it at that point in terms of its development and growth, and could even layer a thing that are impossible to layer using any method that we know of today, but they've done it, and they've at least let me witness it to the point so that I can at least understand how they were able to do this. Now, the differences in their technology shows that the inferior one, which produces these very, very sharp corners, and also was able to move large structures and large stones, and then in fact kind of melt them together. There's another part of the technology that they had. I was represented in terms of the rise in which the celestials who had contacted some of the humans here wanted at least a relationship to be built that was psychic, telepathic, one in which they could communicate with, but not necessarily always coming down and then say hello. one of the things was that when they built an altar, they could not build an altar of cut stone, of hewn rock. Instead, they had to look for just naturally shaped materials and just sort of pile it up to create the altars and things like that, in which to present a burnt offering on and things like that. And that's representative of a more natural approach and the realization of artificial determined design from not the growing up from it, but from the cutting away from it, which is a different approach altogether in terms of sculpture. The sculpture that I saw and introduced to was being grown. It wasn't a chunk of material that we were cutting away material and reducing it. It was a different way. It was the opposite way, and it was unique. It was being guided by the sculptor himself, using a growing type of sculpture, growing the material, much like having clay formed by by potter's hand or wheel, or similar in the sense that you don't cut away material. Well, this is the technologies and the differences that I used to determine who was involved in the evil side and who was involved in the good side. The good side, of course, left more natural marks. It was much harder to find. Those sides that were using technologies that were inferior to those that I have been with are left signs of these stone monuments and temples that they were put out of business working with until we developed, so that we would develop in a more natural sense, in a sense of having the time to be formed by the hand of the Creator, the true Creator, one in which they know is very much in existence. And is an ultimate former of creator or former or engineer of us, and not them who are more like interference. They ran changes in us and interfered with us.
There's a technology right now I have seen that sort of grows prototypes from the ground up. I believe somehow they use a printing method, and they print tens of thousands of layers, and it builds it from the bottom up. And they build things, I don't know, about the size of a bottled water bottle. It's a small area, probably less than a foot square. But have you seen that process? It is utterly amazing. They've designed something, and they put it in this chamber, this printing device, and they print the damn thing. It builds it from the ground up. It takes quite a while, and when it's finished, it looks like, well, they were making action figures. They were making geometric shapes intertwined inside of each other, hexagons inside of spheres, inside of triangles, just unbelievably complex stuff, and they're printing it. So in a way, they're growing it. They're growing it by layers and layers, and okay, that's probably nothing.
Yeah, they're in our printers, you're talking of an X and Z axis type printing. But they added the Z axis in there, which gave it a depth and three-dimensional ability. But it's basically similar in air control of the, the instantaneous hardening of the material as it intersects that point using, a type of laser beam, which would just harden it right into in place. So it's like flying a piece of dough or something, and then immediately get cooked into the spot just where you want it, and it creates, very intricate forms because it's an XYZ. Concept of printing it.
And these things are fragile. They're replications of designs on the screen. They're used for then, I don't know, either make molds from or something. You can't just create a hammer, print one, and go use it. It's not like that. But to watch something just appear from the ground up and be solid that you can reach in and grab it and take it out and set it on the table. That's just amazing.
There's another. I think there's an older technology that's bathed in liquid.
If you're thinking some of the concepts that Michael is throwing at you is unbelievable, we've got stuff close. Well, not close to that, but
yeah, we're approaching many of the things. That's why when it came down to technology, the high Dano, his important message for me to bring back wasn't technology, because he said it would be well into similar technologies by the time I start giving these messages. But the more important message, which has to do with us personally as human beings, our purpose and our destiny beyond our lifespans, and the very fact that we only live relatively short lifespans and a mortal lifespan, is part of the formative process of creating eternal beings. And that soul is an indeed real and importable, exportable commodity, which we own personally as individuals, that can be that vehicle for becoming that eternal being of light, which is our ultimate destiny. But it's not assured. We make choices, and we can also choose through those choices not to become such a being.
I hope I don't digress too much from, but while you're talking about the topic of the soul, and I'd like to ask you the following question. In the, I was reading the Gospel of Mary Magdalene this week, and in one of the passages, Jesus says, according to this gospel, that the soul and the spirit are two different things, and the mind exists in the middle. And then there's a whole bunch of lost pages. So we sort of miss how he goes on to explain that. Would you care to take a crack at that?
Sure. That's exactly the truth. First of all, spirit is a very important vehicle for many of the things that we have in our reality to exist. It helps organize its basis, the spirit of life that gives life, if you ever watch that happen in terms of just seeds sprouting and things like that. These things are amazing, but there's more complex areas that are shared throughout the living planet. You know, in animals, we share many of the things with the animals, and these are on a spiritual plane. And many of our mindal, or I guess base animal type of instinctive thoughts are very similar to the instinctive thoughts of an animal. And because of that, we have, you know, great relationships with our pets, and we find them, you know, a lot of fun and acting in ways that are similar to us. And then we notice that they kind of don't get the mind or part, and we think, well, their brain might not be wired the same. But really, when it comes down to the mind is an influence that we have capability of sharing common mind. And having the mind of Christ is an idea that is really true. It's a type, it is part of the official governance of the universe, the mind of the central governance. So that is something that we can become attuned to and need to become attuned to. And once becoming attuned, we can graduate and move on in terms of our development, because of that attunement attained between the animal base via spiritual means and having that mind, which will lay structure on top of the soul. That structure on top of the soul is all that we really are in terms of our personality, most of our memory, but not all of it. And we can even have very, very interesting structures that can be added upon our soul, such as even our pets, that can who do not have a soul can also be given a chance to ride on along with us and find form in perhaps a Morancho companion. May take that form. So in terms of that functioning together, it all is our possession as we are alive, but we will lose some of the possession when we lose our physical body. Some of the mind or instruments that are key related to the function of our bodies, the thrill of the adrenaline rush of something scary would not appeal to us anymore, because that would be lacking. These things are some of the evidence of some of the base, you might say, electrochemical responses in our bodies that are not going to go or follow us. And although a latent or a base memory will be allowed for on top of the soul, it will necessarily be a requisite. We'll be moving in not necessarily an unfeeling place, but one that is not so controlled by instinctive behaviors that were implanted by the life designers or the life carriers themselves, who placed a certain type of condition into the mind, so that because of our development, we require that the home and the family be built, so that the husband and the wife, by their design, should have remained together to form a solid environment, so that the child could be reared up in a relatively safe environment, not so much like a purely instinctive environment where the nurturing wouldn't take place on a more primitive level. So those areas of instinct would be not following, but in their place would be higher character and characteristics that are transferable through the plane of the soul into eternity and into our eternal point of recognition. And people will recognize this by our personality. They would recognize us by our common story. They would recognize us by many of those factors who have shared a mortal origin on a planet like ours.
Well, guys, you guys have been sending us some emails, so in the interest of time that we have left, let's go to a few, if that's okay with you, Michael.
Okay.
Happy summer, you guys. Dear Michael, please tell us about the classrooms we humans might visit while on the mothership and the Hyborian Gardens in the middle. Thank you. Tangent Juan, the original. That's not your Tangent Juan. It's a gentleman I met, had the pleasure of meeting a few years ago. Nice to hear from you, Tangent Juan. What do you think, Michael?
I am sure that if anyone gets a ride and is taken to the New Jerusalem, upon landing and being definitely escorted out into the park, the garden. That garden may find itself in the evening or in any part of our day, normal day. But you'll not find it stormy. You'll not find it raining. You'll find it perfect, absolutely perfect, and calming and beautiful. My reaction when I first walked through the garden was, okay, you made me feel we've got trees. You got trees here. That's nice. That's nice. That's nice. I kept saying that. That's nice. That's nice. And I kept walking with them. That's nice. And that's exactly what they want you to feel, because it's a very traumatic experience if you just get thrown into this environment of celestials and aliens, and especially if you never experienced anything like that before. These gardens are beautiful in that sense. Moving along through that, you will be going through the normal tests You already have been given the basic clothing, which is just this white garment. And that white garment concept, again, goes back to, you know, biblical things. And I said, oh, is this where they got the idea of a white garment and the wedding garment or the white garment? And you'll be wearing that. All the humans that I met, including Adeno in human form, he wore that type of garment. Others had uniforms or had very tight-fitting clothes. Or none at all. And moving along from that, you'd be ranked in terms of where you belong in your hierarchy and progress. And if you're still base, you'll find yourself being adjusted and realize that where you belong. And they'll allow you to gain higher knowledge according to your readiness. They won't force it down your throat. So if, as soon as you make the classroom, that means you're much, much more ready to absorb celestial knowledge than being traumatized. And the classroom would appear to be interactive between yourself and everyone else. And its layout would be much like that of a restaurant, perhaps, where in a classroom environment, everybody seems to be lined up and seated according to be receiving a lecture. More modern classrooms today are more loosely aligned, where a small group interaction is made. So you'll find the seating arrangement very similar to that, with a circular type tables and seating in a roundabout way, and which people find their way of scooting about and moving about and turning and interacting with each other and other groups very easy to do. So there can be some standing up and walking across the room, talking to somebody else, and then getting back to your table. And all of this is part of the interaction part of gaining association with other celestial beings, with other aliens, finding out that they are people. And this is one of the most basic things that I came away with, is that I realized they're people, but people that project wonderful things. They're not terror, you know, monsters or scary beasts. No, they're wonderful beings, and many of them very telepathic, and their telepathy emits a kind of I love you kind of a concept, you know, and you feel that. You know that.
That is fascinating, Michael. Here's, before I ask this question, these types of meetings are educating you on philosophy, on history, on the socialization of how the universe works. I mean, you know, they don't break out a phaser and go, okay, everybody, take out your phasers. We're going to teach you how to use these. You know, it's
right.
Not like, you know, here, like you're dissecting a starter on a VW bug or something. It's more on the types of fields I was describing earlier, you know, philosophy, religion,
right, exactly.
Socialism.
They want you to move in the direction of higher philosophies. In fact, philosophies that are involving the universe structure itself. So it comes into the area of physics, but their interaction is that, you know, we are actually a part of it. And it's much more than we on planet Earth want to study it as an alien part of us, you know, rather than studying it as part of us. So they study the universe as part of them, and ultimately as part of the expression of the first source and center, which was the name for God that they used. The first source and center was used a lot there.
Well, Chaka wants to know if they're going to give you a class on the floating transporters that you rode on.
Oh, that, how to make one?
Or how to drive
the
it,
ultimate
perhaps.
Skateboard, man. But it was the one that I rode on that flew out into the middle or the inner opening area into that beautiful nautilus shell. It had the pearlescent, iridescent look of a nautilus shell. Flew over that, but along the solid surface it floated, guided. And as I went out on there, that was actually wonderful to try to steer it. And I couldn't steer it like a skateboard or a surfboard. It was pretty much on track, but I couldn't fall off. Even if I tried to fall off, it kind of bounced me back on there, and it was like being bounced by a hard surface. It was being bounced like with a gentle push. So these technologies are very interesting, and it's a way that people get around. Another interesting thing, you don't need to own a car there. I mean, you just got stuff there to just, you know, use because it's there, and that's a way of building a society, too. That is different from the way we build our ownership-based society.
Kind of like, was it the bikes in Seattle, or was that Portland, where they have just bikes laying around, they're yellow, and then anyone can use them, and you just use them, and you leave it outside. Okay, it's nothing like
really?
That. Yeah, it's in one of those, listeners will know, there's a place, they take in bikes, they spray paint them yellow, and they leave them all over the city, and they keep them running, and the community is encouraged to use them, and there's no ownership. Nobody has to steal any because there's just, you know, 10 more down the block. Grab one and use it.
Wow, wonderful. I know that, I think it was up in Europe. Where was that now? Perhaps Amsterdam. There's a lot of bikes, and people were kind of not, you know, using there wasn't no public system, but people were borrowing bikes all the time and fired them in the canals. Yeah. Anyway,
give me a bike. I want to throw it in the canal.
Yeah, but that wasn't my bike. Well, it got me here. I destroyed it in the canal. But
we have
a better system would be to have that happen, and nobody would have to worry about all that. Bikes just clog up the canals.
Except the guys that have to fish them out. We have an email from our old host D.L. Tanner. Used to be one of our Bigfoot Central hosts and a great guy. Did some terrific programs. Dale, we got to get a hold of me after the show one of these days. It says, hi, Scott. Michael is wonderful. Michael, do we have to be like the Phoenix Rising, rebirth into the new human?
Actually, we will not be rising from the ashes because, you know, the idea was that it got burned down, so you're going to come rising back up in a similar form. But this is not the case at all. We're our original line of progress is going to be, and is in this year, will be coming into alignment. The paradigm will shift, and we'll be moving not as a phoenix rising, but coming back to the original plan, which was interfered with by, as we noted, the fallen ones. And we'll be superseding many of the technologies that we are amazed at looking at right now because they will be allowed for us to understand. So our planet will actually move in a much more wonderful way. Believe it or not, visiting around and getting to know each other around the planet will be one of the great pastimes of life here on the planet, and then moving about the planet will be made, you know, like I'm sure these levitators, discs and things like that will be wonderful to be working with, and it sure should solve a lot of traffic problems on the short haul stuff.
Hey, wasn't that what the Segway was going to do?
Yeah.
Whatever happened to that, man? Guy.
But a Segway, you can crash and get hurt, but that one he couldn't.
If you look at the population of the Earth, there's a lot of people who you would, let's just call them believers. And I don't even care what religion we're talking about, any of the religions. You'll have a portion of the population who are spiritual and try to believe some kind of philosophy of living, and there's a bigger picture. Then you have a lot of people that just say, you know, all that's mumbo jumbo. I mean, that could be, I don't know, a significant number of the people on the planet just don't have any use for religion. It's just a bunch of nonsense to them, and, you know, they just don't need it. So as you said earlier, as this revelation testifies to the reality of angels, if the non-believers realize that there are bad angels among us, and some of the things that have happened that have not been good have been because of them. Do you think that will make more converts?
More converts.
Do you think people will be scared into following this path?
The path of
goodness. And, you know, if they realize that, okay, there are wonderful beings that are helping us, but there's also some not so wonderful beings that are intermixing with you that have influenced us in bad ways. I wonder if the larger population of people around the world, or whatever percentage that is, that just have no reason to use religion in their lives, if they will wake up and go, well, hey, these people were right, and I better get on the side of goodness.
It may help, but one of the important factors that has to be overcome by each individual, whether it be a planet, let's say Earth was a planet that never had influence of Satan and Lucifer's philosophies of the ultimate freedom from God. Would it be like for an individual to have to gain the attunement to the greater mind and splendor of this shared mind? It is scary, because one of the things is that when we function and we grow up, we gain trust in our, you know, ourselves to stand up and walk, and our senses and all this stuff, our mind, how we perceive the planet and the world and situations. But there's a point in which our wills become a private, absolutely sovereign place where we will not give that up. But ultimately, the challenge, it doesn't matter if it's a fallen planet like ours or a planet of true destiny, the process of will alignment, our personal will, coming into alignment with the divine will or the divine one, to become truly a divine being, is a point of challenge, because it means we give up part of our free will to a higher mind. And that is scary. That is frightening, because suddenly we feel like we lose control of our lives. And that is a point that is a emotionally terrifying point for some people, because of the reality of the invasiveness of the higher will of divinity into our lives. And it presses on us and can press on any individual, whether they come from a fallen world or one perfect. It's still the same press, an external divine will saying, you know, I'm here, just invite me in. I'll help you. And it's much like how Christ said, you know, behold, I stand at the door and knock. If any man hear my voice, there I am. You know, I'll come in and sup with you. The same exact function happens in a world that hasn't fallen, or a world that is like ours that has fallen. So the challenge is the same in the beginning. And the ultimate end destiny is the entire population to come under a type of glorious celestial resonance. So we wouldn't necessarily be totally free because there are restrictions that we place by our own choosing upon ourselves, so that, you know, we won't, let's say, harm our fellow man or our environment that exists because of our behavior. We place our own restrictions upon ourselves. And that is the higher realm of the higher governance of the higher mind that needs to become a part of every individual. Although the seed has been planted for the our planetary people, our human beings on our planet, all, when looking at right and wrong and the idea concept, are given a pre-personal fragment of divinity, the divine fractal of assistance and help in this process. When that begins to take its place fully, this marvelous world will transition, a great and wonderful time will happen. But it happens at an individual level, and that's true. Every person has to make the choice themselves, and some may hold on desperately to their identity and selfishness and not become truly selfless persons.
Well, Michael, the time has gotten away with us, folks. Don't even have time for the normal end of the spiel show. It's always fascinating to have you with us, Michael. I look forward to we're going to have 2 weeks off, and we'll be joining you again. They'll be rebroadcast the next 2 weeks, and we'll be joining you again the third week of July. So stay well, everybody, and aloha, and I'll talk with you then, Michael. Stay well.
Okay, aloha.